Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Property can be quite a slow moving, growth formula. And if you pay too much for property, you know, you're going to have to wait and take some time for it to grow past what you've paid. And obviously, if you want to recycle equity, you know, it has to grow quite handsomely.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyron Shump, and in this episode, we're speaking with passionate property investor Sam Zagas, a managing partner in Positive Real Estate. We'll chat about the influence from friends in high places, whose home was featured on The Bachelor, and how a blunder early in his journey made him realize the true worth of property. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. With 20 years of experience in the real estate industry, Zagas has two separate roles dividing his time while also an active property investor himself.
My name is Sam Zagas. I'm CEO of Positive Real Estate, which is an investment agency located in Australia and New Zealand. I'm also a managing partner of Richardson & Wrench, which is Australia's oldest real estate agency. I work within the projects division there. Over the last 20 years, I've specialised in understanding investment real estate and understanding the various different markets around Australia. I've built up a property portfolio over those years of over 20 odd properties and learned a few tips and strategies along the way.
In any given day, he's immersed in property, whether it be researching, strategizing, or inspecting.
Most given days, I'm analyzing real estate, researching property, visiting different cities. I spend a lot of my time simply sharing information, talking to people about property investment strategies within the marketplace. I do a lot of presentations. So most days I'm either presenting on property or actually visiting real estate and inspecting it.
And you mentioned that you're part of Richardson Wrench in the property project division. So what's that entail?
Yeah, so Richardson Wrench Projects, Richardson Wrench is Australia's oldest real estate agency. It's very, people from Sydney, for example, would be quite familiar with it. Within the Richardson Wrench Projects division, I head up and specialise properties which are suitable for investment, but also owner-occupying properties which are primarily projects in inner urban areas. So yeah, it's just residential, really targeted towards the sort of home buyer market.
Finding passion in his roles within both businesses, Zagas is constantly amazed by the different dimensions of real estate.
Because I obviously lead up Positive Real Estate, which is really a wholesaler within the marketplace. It's an investor focused business. It's great because I get to work with people who are passionate about the investment or the buying side of real estate. And then as I work in Richardson & Wrench, I get to see another side of real estate, which is, you know, properties that people want to make their own home. I also get to see the selling side of real estate, what sells well in the marketplace, what typically fetches more at auction, for example, because the properties tick a lot of boxes. So I get to, yeah, I guess live the property dream with representing both businesses.
Growing up in a wealthier area of Sydney, Sager's exposure to affluent families was part of the reason why he became involved with property.
So I grew up in Sydney. I grew up in quite an affluent suburb called Hunters Hill here in Sydney. It's sort of 10 kilometres from the city centre. Hunters Hill is a suburb still today full of many millionaires and billionaires. Back when I was growing up there, certainly I was exposed to many wealthy individuals in that suburb. My family, bit of a sort of working class battlers, we actually bought in that suburb, or my parents bought in that suburb in a street really no one wanted to buy in. It had a bit of a sort of bad reputation in that neighborhood, so they picked up something quite cheap. And then just raised me, obviously, in the neighborhood. And I guess it was a bit of a gift because I got to be surrounded by families that were extremely wealthy. Today, some of, I guess, the BRW top 200 richest Australians live in Hunters Hill. And many of those families I was exposed to at a young age. In fact, really, my early exposure to their wealth, which was tied up primarily in real estate, was one of the reasons I'm in real estate, and one of the reasons I invest in real estate, because I saw quite early on from many of these wealthy families that dominate that suburb that really, if you want to become quite stable economically in your life, property is such a good vehicle.
This influence remained strong throughout his formative years.
So I went to a couple of schools, but I did go to the local primary school. And at that local sort of primary school, many of the kids from the neighbourhood also were there. And I became very good friends with many of them, which I'm, of course, friends with today. Becoming friends with, I guess, you know, just like any kid in any neighbourhood, you got to go over to your friend's house, and then all of a sudden, unbeknownst to you, their father is, a mogul in real estate. And that happened to me on several occasions in that suburb. So I was pretty blessed for my family to sort of decide to live there.
Some of the families which influenced Sagas at a young age turned out to be owners of two of the most successful companies in Australia, with one of the family's houses actually aired on a popular television program.
For me, probably two families kind of stood out. The first was the Graces, and the Graces were, the family that started Grace Brothers, which today is called Myers. And the Graces were a beautiful family. They had one of the most interesting properties in that suburb at that time. It was literally, like a castle. In fact, the property most recently was on The Bachelor, the TV show, as the sort of the place where that show was filmed. But it was such an interesting property to go and visit on a daily basis that, for a start, I fell in love with architecture at an early age from visiting that property, because it was just such an interesting property. And then over and above that, I guess, my friend Sean, the Teak family, they're well-known, property owners here in Sydney. Their company is called Gwynville, and they would own, several hundred residential, commercial, industrial properties across Australia. They feature in BRW top 200 wealthiest sort of Australian families, and yeah, without question, spending time with them always taught me many, many lessons on real estate.
That is so inspiring, so cool too. So just since you've touched on the topic, that the Grace's house, so is that the actual house you're saying that was filmed on The Bachelor? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so I think it was the first 3 or 4 seasons of The Bachelor, and then they decided to move it to another house. But yeah, season 1, 2, 3, I think.
Gosh, how did you feel when you actually saw it on TV? You must have got spiked memories.
To be honest, I wasn't watching the program until just one night I randomly sort of walked past it, and at the time I was like, oh, I know that house. And then I actually sort of just texted my friend and asked Sean, actually, is that you know, Ted's house? And yeah, he was like, yeah, it's on The Bachelor.
So, small world.
Yeah, small world.
Yeah, by the way, your house is on TV. Did you know that?
I had no idea. But, look, they've long since sold up and moved on. But it was just how I remembered it. It was an amazing piece of architecture.
Wow. Yeah.
It's something really exciting to be exposed to it at a very young age.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve further into Saga's journey and discover what was the next step for him.
But in my era, we did a 3-year diploma, and then, you know, you could work in the industry while, you know, studying real estate.
How he started out in property investing.
As you do when you're young, you're kind of full of energy, but not necessarily that street smart when it comes to economics. And I guess I jumped the gun and paid a little bit too much for the property.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Are you looking at buying or investing in property? Like, what are the property hotspots, or how do I start my portfolio? Clever ways to renovate, and how to make an extra $50,000? Whether you're a new or experienced investor, learn from the experts at the Property Buy Expo in Brisbane on the 26th to 27th of May. Use the promo code PI for a free 2-day pass valued at $50. For tickets and more information, visit the website at propertybuyexpo.com.au. Now back to the show. After completing his schooling, Sagas travelled for a year before beginning his tertiary education in real estate.
After sort of school, I actually went travelling for a bit of a gap year and went and lived overseas. Lived in London, lived in Sweden, lived in Cyprus, and just got some worldly, I guess, experience around travel and people. And from there, came back to Australia, and actually at the time, that particular time, to get into real estate was a 3-year diploma. And you did that primarily at TAFE, sort of 4 days a week. And they've chopped and changed it over the years, from property economics degrees to diplomas and things like that. But in my era, we did a 3-year diploma, and then, you know, you could work in the industry while, you know, studying real estate. So for me, I essentially, sort of started out by learning it through education, and then jumped into getting a job in real estate, and really, you know, early on I was in real estate. So from age 19, I jumped into real estate.
Although starting his career in real estate in property management and sales, he found his niche when he began investing into property.
I started just in property management for a couple of years, and worked in North Ryde, and just did the sort of ground up kind of approach, and from there got into some early residential sales, and then really, I guess my fascination with real estate didn't take off until I started to invest in real estate. I guess I wasn't a fantastic salesperson or a fantastic property manager. So I never liked that side of real estate where, today, I guess many real estate agents really don't even own real estate. They pride themselves on being great salespeople. For me, I was a sort of mediocre kind of salesperson and mediocre property manager, but I liked the industry and really, I guess I found my home when I started buying real estate and started to become a buyer's agent. And that's really, it took a little bit of time to get to that place, but yeah, that's where my passion lies.
That's really good. So sort of putting things into perspective, roughly what year was this going back when you first started getting into buying property and also investing into property?
It would have been like close to, I guess, the year 2000, maybe 1999. And I bought sort of my first property in Sydney, actually. And I sort of chose a property which wasn't the best. It was an area I knew quite well. And I started out with that property and I guess I've gone on to bigger and better things since then.
In 2000, the first property Sagas invested in was bought emotionally in a familiar area. Upon failing to yield to his satisfaction, he eventually sold it and started afresh.
So I just bought a property in Sydney in a suburb, Putney, and it was close to where I lived, close to where I worked. It was, I guess, at the time, I probably paid too much for the property. I was a little bit emotional about it. There's a few other people quite interested in it. And as you do when you're young, you're kind of full of energy, but not necessarily that street smart when it comes to economics. And I guess I jumped the gun and paid a little bit too much for the property. Property can be quite a slow moving, growth formula. And if you pay too much for property, you're going to have to wait and take some time for it to grow past what you've paid. And obviously, if you want to recycle equity, it has to grow quite handsomely. So my first property, I only held it for about 18 months, and then I decided to sell it because it was old, secondhand. It was full of repairs and maintenance problems. It was really not a great yielding property. And I ended up sort of selling it and sort of starting again. But it taught me a great lesson, that you need to understand how much a property truly costs to own you week in, week out. You need to know your tax foundation to understand, what your true costs are. And really need to just understand what extra costs are involved in holding real estate, particularly if it's old and a bit run down. So for me, the actual daily cost of running that property plus the fact that I overpaid for the property, I couldn't see, a winning economic outcome for many years to come. So I decided just to sell it and I could save faster than I could having a property which was, going backwards.
Having accumulated 20 properties in his portfolio, it's not always been a smooth road to success. Sagas has learned over the years to ensure that owning properties doesn't impact on his lifestyle.
Oh, look, I think I've been quite fortunate. I mean, probably my low was the previous story I just sort of mentioned where I overpaid for property and bought a property which was, really sucking the cash out of me. I think it's prudent today. I mean, a lot of people in Sydney, for example, where property prices are expensive, where incomes aren't necessarily growing right now. A lot of those properties cost $500 a week just from your wage to hold. So you have to be very, very careful that you're, choosing a property which is primarily paid for through the tenant and or tax. And once you're spending, you know, I think more than $50 or $100 a week out of your own back pocket, it gets very difficult to own real estate and feel good about it. So for me, really the pain lesson was to the cash flow side of real estate. When you have really good rents and really good deductions from property, really you shouldn't need to put too much out of your own, you know, wage or job or lifestyle. The big lesson for me was the first property I chose actually impacted my lifestyle, which made me quite unhappy. And I sort of vowed to never make that kind of mistake again. And fortunately, you know, most of the properties I've chosen have all been able to wash their own face, pay for themselves. So even if they haven't grown like exponentially, or even if I haven't been able to recycle money out of them quickly, they've never bothered me because the rents and the tax incentives have always looked after the asset.
His aha moment where everything clicked for him was when he realized the potential of property where it's directed and made for owner occupiers as an end result.
You know, I feel like I'm continually learning and understanding the real estate market, and without question, I kind of have those moments all the time, but probably most recently, I guess for me, understanding the real estate market of today, there's lots of supply of real estate out there. There's a lot of production. Australia's got a big plan to certainly grow its population. We need a new property every 3 minutes and 55 seconds to keep up with the population production that Australia's overall goal is. Our big cities are being activated with people. And so for me, probably the biggest lesson is, and really I think it's a shrewd lesson is, you know, there's a lot of homogenous real estate out in the real estate market, and many properties are just designed poorly. They're produced en masse. And I'm not talking about just big buildings. Some big buildings are produced and are very unique, very architecturally savvy, very beautiful. And some buildings are just, you know, just not. And the same with houses. Some houses really appeal to the owner-occupier marketplace, and then other houses, people will never buy them as an owner-occupier, and they'll sit in a sort of rental pool for life. And I guess my big moment or most recent aha moment is, you know, you really got to focus on properties that people aspire to one day call their home. Because if you buy an investment that one day becomes someone's own home, and they look at it because it is unique and beautiful and good, they'll pay you top dollar for that property. And you'll get very good capital growth along the way. The moment you forget there is or needs to be an end user over and above you, the investor, who's just getting a rental return, you know, real estate can be quite cruel if an owner-occupier doesn't want the property from you. So I think the big moment for me is really investments today, in particular in this sort of saturated marketplace that we're seeing, you know, they need to stand out from the crowd, and they need to be in really good locations and be, you know, sought after by people who one day want to live in them and call them their home. And if you, I think, stick to those three basics, a good property, a good location, and a property which is going to meet the market, then you're going to do well out of real estate.
In the belief that choosing the right property is vital, Sagas says that property needs to be liquid.
there's a lot of investment grade real estate out there, and they're in subpar locations. I mean, you can do whatever you want to real estate. You can rent it out. You can, you know, I don't know, develop it, subdivide it, renovate it. But you can never change a property's location, and you're stuck with it. So I think, you know, buying in the right street, in the right neighborhood, in the right suburb or town, and then focusing in on, well, what is the right dwelling for that area? And that could be in a big building, or it could be in a small building, or it could be in an individual, you know, detached home. But it's got to be the right dwelling. And as soon as you choose the wrong property, your capital growth is less, your ability to recycle equity is harder, even if the market grows. And of course, you are exposed to a tough resale market. You know, real estate needs to be liquid. If you've bought the right property, you should be able to sell it within 30 to 60 days. If you bought the wrong property, it can take months, even years, to offload the wrong property. And that's just because it doesn't match what truly the local market is looking for.
So, inspired by Sagar's story and his amazing aha moment, we'll continue the conversation in a future episode on Property Investory, where we'll discuss the nuts and bolts of his strategy.
So I think the main thing to create a good long-term buy and hold strategy is, without question, you've got to have a fairly good rental return that allows you to cover the debt you take on.
The personal habit which has contributed towards his success.
Technology is improving and replacing people for the most part in broad economics. So I guess for me, like, I just constantly got to learn.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send out exclusively via email, then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to receive your free case studies. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.